You go surfing around to find stuff for fun. But the reality is, where's the value? Where's the value? And if you put it in an economics context, now you're seeing the advent of e-commerce, you know, and portals are in, but soon hubs are going to be in. And business is going to say, okay, this has been really fun. We've got a website here, but how are we going to use it? How are we going to make sense out of it? And there's going to be a shift occurring. In fact, I think there is a shift occurring right now as the technology continues to evolve and it's easier to deliver services. And I think that when that happens, and
you can't charge for advertising.
Forget advertising. How about creating some other value?
Markets, yeah. Well, you know, like destination site, that's as valuable as dollars. So, you know, in other words, you get people to your site.
But in the background of all this, the web still does best what it was originally designed to do, which is facilitate esoteric research. And if you're trying to free yourself from the illusions of the society, this is just an enormous unclosed loophole that they've left open. And, you know, it used to be that at some literature department at some girls' school in Massachusetts, they would undertake some massive project of the studying the Dunciad or something like that. And then when it was finished, it would fade out of existence. Now all that stuff is uploaded and exists for anybody to browse through, and I think Esoterica has gotten the greatest shot in the arm since the reign of Rudolf of Bohemia. and it has a dark side because it spawns squirrely conspiracy theories, because now there are so many more factoids than ever before that whoever and whatever you believe is manipulating your life, you can go onto the web and find incontrovertible evidence to back you up. But on the other hand, if you really have a sincere sense of what research is, the web is like a magic wand. I mean, I've Amen. Been interested for years and years in alchemy. Well, for years it was expensive, overpriced facsimile editions or visits to libraries in obscure parts of the world to pay for microfiches and all this. Now one guy, Adam McLean, puts a site up at Levity and it's essentially a larger alchemical library that ever existed anywhere in the world during the height of the age of alchemy. And that's just one site. So I think it's impossible to predict the number of pathways and trajectories through what the web is. What it really is freedom spelled very large.
I'd like to bring something up. I mean, about 30 years ago, there was this sport called Ultimate Frisbee that was invented. I don't know if anybody knows about it. But I started playing back in like 71, right? And it was this very cool sport where everyone would just have to be playing with each other, right? And you travel all over the country, you'd meet people all over the country. It's this great thing. And it evolved into this national sport where, and I used to say this, I always thought it was the younger kids, it was probably the older guys too, right? It became more competitive, and it became a game that you had to win, and a game that you just enjoyed to compete. And the time I saw this guy get strangled on the field, I decided it was time to go do something else.
Wow.
Right? And so the web seems to me, is it like it's an infancy, if I fit, right. Understand it, where you're touching people all over the place.
Right.
It seemed to me it was this natural urge, man's aggression, women's aggression, whatever, because both sides get very competitive. And I would be, and this deal seems to have much more financial implications, which scares me, knowing the people I know in the finance world, right? How do you think that, I mean, to me, I
mean, the markets,
free, I don't know.
Well, the markets are going to have, you know, they're playing in this space, but that's it. They're at play in the space in just the same way we're at play in the space. And in fact, the beauty of it is that Disney can't actually bring people to their site. The beauty of the web is that the portals exist and you may click on them briefly, but that's not where you stay. There are a few, in sense of commercials, like news sites that are sort of giving people what they want. But everything else on the web is, and I mean everything else, is this vast set of arcana, esoterica. That's actually where people are. You know, I mean, yes, you may be bringing in a certain amount of content as daily news and things like that, but this, and I almost think of it as a hummus layer. You know, this just sort of,
well,
this mat.
You know how in Manhattan the desirable business spaces are at street level on major thoroughfares? There's no parallel to that in the web.
Right.
It's just a mycelial mass. There are no privileged positions. And so there's no way to really reach people unless they are somehow participating in what you're selling.
So there's all these millions, right?
I know billions. It's getting close to 100 million.
How do you find
or more?
You want to go? Well, I see people say, I want to get a couple people to throw some things out there. Help yourself on your favorite websites.
Right.
And that's maybe where people...
Learning filters and search engines is the challenge of the next level. It's about learning how to filter.
Finding meaning.
We've talked very little about the idea of a bot, which is like your servant, which essentially will know your tastes and is going to do your web for you, kind of will deliver you the type of things you're interested in. That's coming about more, and the indication's always been that those will be kind of like animated sort of or video type images that are, you know, kind of going to talk to you. Hello, you know, good morning. Here's what I've got for you. Did you know the new Tori Amos record was out today? Shall I have him drop one to you in 2 days? That sort of thing.
How many days to Eschaton? That's what I
want. I want to throw this ripple though on your economic question, and it's been troubling me for the last about 18 months, and I'm going to ask Mark, Owen, and Steve, and anyone that's been in the Vermal community to dance around it a little, and correct me, but I'll just, for the rest of you, I'll spin a little bit about Vermal, which you probably don't know, which is sort of the birthing, and Mark, and that list that he talked about of those, did you say 200 or so? 2,000. 2,000, researchers and programmers created VRML and very consciously fought to keep it from being owned or, you know, redirected by one corporate interest. And so they got these big corporations, Silicon Graphics and
Microsoft and Netscape and blah, blah, blah.
Come on board and say, okay, we will not try to rip off your code and copyright it. We will not try to compete with each other and, you know. And that's how VRML was born. And from that was this profusion of amazing, sort of design and ideas and stuff that spilled out into the web. The next stage was that there was a browser war that Microsoft came out with Internet Explorer, which was to go head to head with Netscape, and that VRML, you understand, operates as a kind of a plugin that works inside the browser and just shows you how it shows you 3D objects or environments in your browser. But the problem that I experienced, having worked for most of the people in the Bay Area doing VRML work in those years, was that in the last 18 months, it seemed to me that the browser war kind of killed VRML, because due to, I don't know how, and that's what I want you guys to answer, kind of, the plugins for VRML really didn't function very well in the browsers, and most people I knew couldn't get it to run.
It's a very rapidly changing environment. It's a very chaotic environment, and it's in some cases very difficult to make complex pieces of software stable in that environment.
Okay, but my question really is, do you think there was any kind of concerted effort to devolve your vision, and or is that some function of this, of the economic forces that created the browser war, or
I think personally I think it does come down to market forces. I think there's a big issue with that, because you have to look at, I mean, first it went from being a gee-whiz technology to everyone wanting to use it and get on board with it, and a lot of people came on board right at first and said, we have to have this. People started producing it, and then it was a question of, well, how do we use it? And I think that that's one issue with 3D graphics right now is that it's still looking...
What do we use it for? That's the grand project right now.
You know, it has...
It's a solution looking for a problem.
It's not like... People don't understand a 3D space the same way they understand a web page. Why? Because they think magazine when they look on the web. Mm-hmm. People look at the web and they see books.
If I might, I want to just spin this a little bit. Get this really clearly. I mean, we're devolving into geek talk.
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
So
that's all right.
This is very clearly. You are the browser. That other shit is just code. It's written by people. But you are the browser. You make your browsing decisions. You don't want pieces of code written by Microsoft, Netscape, SGI, or any other company making your browsing decisions for you. You have to own the. You have to own that process, putting your energy into the web surfing process and deciding where you want to go. If you're going to use a search engine or a filter, you're going to use that search engine or filter. You are still the one that's going to plug the words in, telling it what you're looking for. It's going to give you back selections, and then you're going to select even further. You're going to filter up in here. The original reality engine is up in here.
Right.
And I think this is really, really important. One of the things you talked about compelling earlier, and I found some years ago a formula for compelling. The formula for compelling is always richness over resolution. The markets are creating a resolution because every day there's more stuff, there's a bigger size to it. But the richness comes from what Susan was saying about the kids. Look at the kids. Look at them. They're under 20 for the most part, and they just go and do it. They don't talk about it. You half the time for, you know, they create barriers to entry that if you don't have enough technical savvy, you can't find them. You can't play with us. You're lame. Go play someplace else. You have to pass the test before you can walk through this door and play with us. But once you can pass that test, you know, it's a pretty fine, pretty rich, and pretty compelling experience. But just remember that you are the browser.
Well said.
There you go.
Did you want to do it?
Yeah, with Ronan.
Uh-huh.
We're going to take a little twist out of the technical and back up to our main theme. You're on deck. He's been very, very silent this weekend, but he's been my assistant. And more than that, he's been my philosophical foil for 5 years and counting now. So that a lot of the ideas that you hear coming from me, and I need to be very honest, not all of them are my own ideas. I'm just sharing where I've been. Yeah, I know. I'm sharing where I've been. Big shock. Ronan has, who's now up here, has helped me explore a lot of these ideas, and I owe an enormous amount of my intellectual development to him. And he's going to take the idea of the new story and where that new story is and was and where maybe it should be a little bit further.
All right, thanks. Kind of start up talking the new story. One thing that Terrence mentioned about the web, and he mentioned the word freedom. I think this is kind of ultimately what we want to move towards in our lives, in living, in weaving these stories, is this freedom. I mean, this is one of the ultimate things that we can have in our lives. And for this kind of freedom, there's a letting go of our egos that needs to take place, and a kind of immersion within being that needs to take place. And there's a quote from a rabbi, a Jewish rabbi named Abraham Joshua Heschel, and he said, "There is no freedom without awe." And I think if you do a good dose of psychedelics, I think that you kind of get the idea of awe. Mm-hmm. Or if you get a good night of the stars, watching meteor showers, you get a good sense of awe. Or if you have a good night of making love, you get this sense of awe. And this is one of the fundamental experiences of being human. And this is what talking about an archaic revival, in a sense, is a recovery of that primordial awe of the splendor of existence. And so when we talk about creating a new story, it's a process of remembrance, of coming back to where it is we've come from, and an intense process of self-knowledge and examination. So the end of history, in a sense, requires first an understanding of history, of what's gone forward. And so this is kind of an understanding of the evolution of the human species, the evolution of cultures. You know, we need to learn, how did we get to this place, and where are we now? And it's this process of self-exploration that can lead us into whatever it is that's before us. And I think that the story that we're looking for is a story of wholeness. Also, what Terence talks about a lot is this concrescence. And so this story of wholeness is a way of making this concrescence happen. That word concrescence, one way to think of it, is the coming together of disparate strands into a nexus. It's this kind of unification of being. And this story of wholeness is not just we need to go beyond these naive kind of propositions of a story of wholeness in our times also requires a deep acceptance, which also requires an acceptance of fragmentation. We live in a world of fragmentation, and yet somehow that's part of a larger wholeness. And what Western civilization has gone through is an intense kind of separation from its kind of cosmic womb, this kind of birth and separation process, and that's part of it. And but there's always a higher level of order, of interconnection. And so this new story, one, has this fundamental premise that everything is related. And this story, there's some people that work in it, it also is based fundamentally on the insights of the new science and of quantum physics. It's this scientific understanding of the world and this fundamental premise that everything is connected. And so this technology that we're using are ways to highlight these interconnections and tell the story of who we are as human people, and as members of the Earth community, and as members of the cosmos. And so the fundamental discipline for this new story, for us to be able to remember who we are and evolve who we are and our many different permutations, is, I would say, the fundamental discipline of our time is cosmology. And a lot of my understanding of this idea of a new story within the context of an understanding of science comes from two philosophers and scientists named Thomas Berry and Brian Swim. One is a cultural historian and Catholic priest in his 80s, who's a student of Teilhard de Chardin. And the other one, Brian Swim, is a mathematical cosmologist. And they basically articulate this kind of trajectory of evolution, and to give us a context for understanding ourselves in relationship to the planet and to the cosmos, and understanding that the cosmos is an ongoing experience. It's cosmogenic. It's constantly giving birth. And part of our role is to participate in that, and that we create these worlds, and that there's these dynamics that go on that are larger than us, but we also fundamentally are also giving birth to them. We bring forth a world together. And Let me see where. So anyway, this point that cosmology is the synthesis of art, religion, philosophy, and science. And so this is what we need today. We need a new wisdom school, basically, in my opinion. We have vast tracts of knowledge. Everything is out there on the plate, and it's how do we bring these things together? And I think a lot of it, we need to start with from this place of awe. We have a sense of reverence for the sanctity of creation, for the sanctity of ourselves. And I think from this, we need to start from a place of respect for ourselves and for others. And from this place, I think we can move to create from the heart in that place. And all of these tools we're talking about can be used for this. And I think a lot of it is to take a responsibility to learn who you are as a person in relationship to all that is. And there's vast amounts of material out there to do that. And then I think from this place, using that to move towards freedom. And in one article I read from Terrence, it was, I think, published about 10 years ago in Revision Magazine, and it was on UFOs. And I remember him saying something, what will the end of the world look like? And he said in the article, well, it's not going to be just aliens coming down and having this big thing. Said it's kind of an inner revolution where it's just something about appropriate activity and felt experience and letting go of the illusion of separateness. That itself would be the revolution, and this appropriate activity coming out from authentic being and interconnection and letting that move through us. And that, in a sense, is the eschaton, is a sense of authentic being in interrelationship, grounded in a sense of deep remembrance of who we are from the place that we began. And so anyway, that's pretty much all I have to say. But really, the things, freedom and celebration, those are the two key.
And awe,
yeah, for creating this new world together.
So without without it becoming an ideology, how are you arguing then that the work, the great work, and also all the little works we should do, should in every part try to show relation? Is that in fact what part of the new story is? Is that the new story is invoking and making explicit the relations that have always been implicit? I mean, I take a look at my own work, and then in light of what you just said, that makes sense. Yes, I'm trying to invoke into explicitness the relations that have always been implicit.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's what we want to do, and that's part of the fundamental ecological crisis, is that we don't understand the thing. We don't see the ecosystemic interconnections, and so it's easy for us to pollute and so on, because we don't see the ramifications of that until, you know, it becomes some toxic waste site. So, yeah, this fundamental, and also that it needs to start at home. It needs to start within our own center of the relationships within ourselves, which will also help us keep from going the schizophrenic route. We might have lots of selves, which is okay. And if you understand the connections between them, you can be with them and not go nuts. And then from that place inside, you're in a structural coupling with reality, with other human beings, and when you make explicit and honor those relationships, I think there's a new level that can take place. And I know from my study, I work a lot with the Lakota people from the Plains, and in all of their prayers and all of their ceremonies, like if any time you're in a sweat lodge and you finished saying a prayer or something, they say, Aho mitakye oyase, all my relations, I'm related to everything. And that's a constant thing that's always said. It's a, you get in the sweat or at a ceremony. And so this is a story that they tell themselves all the time.
So it's a new story that's an archaic story.
Yeah. And again, the Vilvaga comes down to this remembrance as well. Remembrance and the explicitness of relationship.
Well, I think that, sorry to interrupt, but I think that maybe the Disneyfication of reality is something I've been disturbed about, and I think your little hat was leading to that. There's this, and that may be the divergence or the opposite of what you're talking about, is the web can be used to market, mass market, a view of reality that you can just sit there and be entertained in front of your TV. And I just hope that, like this gentleman was saying about the first 50 years of the print, that this desire to incorporate the paradigm, the archaic paradigm,
right,
doesn't just get viewed by the kids 100 years from now as, oh, that was just the transition state where they were trying to hang on to the old before we,
I mean, it might be, but that might be because we transitioned to something that's just as authentic and just as meaningful, ideally.
I think in trying to think about a new story, what's really changed, or what the sea change has been, at least for me over the past 50 years, is modernity was thoroughly existential. In other words, reductionist science tells you you're the product of cosmic accident, meaning is conferred, you're lucky to be here, nature has no interest in your fate, nature indeed has no purpose at all, all of these things. And my own intellectual journey, both experientially with psychedelics and through mathematical analysis of history and all this kind of stuff, leads to the conclusion that this existential point of view is able to maintain itself only by ignoring the evolutionary thrust toward complexity and novelty that occurs on every level of being. And that, in fact, if you begin to value novelty, you suddenly have a basis for a new human ethic. Because human beings, with their languages and their technologies, represent a level of novelty never before achieved on this planet, something which builds on animal nature as a platform but goes well beyond it. And so suddenly, from being a random accident, from being a chance-created witness to a meaningless cosmos, we become the cutting edge of the very process that the cosmos itself seems to value or seek to magnify and preserve. So what has crept back in to being is, for me and anybody else who accepts these overarching metaphors, what has crept back in is value. And value is, it's a different kind of value than we've ever seen before. The last time we knew values, they were handed down from a religious hierarchy that talked directly to God and got strange messages. The new values are self-evident from an examination of nature. Anybody can inform themselves about the facts of biology and large-scale complex systems and so forth and so on. So the new story is a story of recognize our placement at this breaking wave of novel advance, and then suddenly technology becomes a religious enterprise, good for something other than buildings, consumer electronics, and small appliances, but actually seen as the path toward some kind of transcendent possibility. The goal is well formulated in spiritual ontology, but the methods are a mess. You know, these methods either don't work or require lifetimes or make demands on people's behavior that is practically inhuman. So I think the new story is based on the recognition of our own centrality. We haven't stood at the center of the cosmic stage for 700 years in our official myth, and now suddenly we're returned there, and returned there not merely as witnesses in a central position, but suddenly as actors, because these technologies that are coming into our hands are truly Promethean, truly Faustian, truly capable of making us like unto a god, but not in the service of market capitalism and consumer fetishism, more in the service of this emotion of awe which Ronan invoked. You wanted to say something.
That was beautifully put, Ronan, what you said earlier, and I'm 100% convinced that we need to remember the source from which we came before we even entered these bodies, this particular incarnation. And getting to the authentic self in the community, and things that we had talked about last night of coming back together instead of being isolated selves. Nowhere this weekend have we talked about actually experiencing life, the living of life in this particular moment. You know, past is a history, the future is a mystery. That's why they call it present gift. I mean, where are we with the computer in simulations? There, for me personally, I answer this question as a rather beautiful curiosity answerer. I'm in the professional world, the working world of computers, and no one I know goes home and goes on the computer, stays and surfs around and plays them. I mean, I have witnessed this metamorphosis in a service world as a tool. It's a tool that has been a stronger technological advance than what we've had before. Yes, that's true. But it's not a way of life. And I'm hearing a lot of people that the computer is their way of life. And the talk about TV and the hypnosis and yada yada, all that stuff is very true. But is this what we want our life to become, or do we want to actually experience it? Do we want to come here and look out at the ocean and then come and talk about these ideas? Or do we want to sit in a room with this thing flashing us? We have to have a saver to save our eyes from even staring at this thing for so long. Is that where we want to experience life?
Well, I think the answer is a resounding yes. It is where we want to experience life, because it is part of life experience that our historical moment has dealt us. In other words, you mention it as a tool, but it is not a tool. It does not turn a screw or reset an alarm. It can do anything.
It so does look up data quickly.
It does anything you can name.
You know,
it does.
Yeah,
I mean, it'll...
It's not life.
Well, I don't know exactly what you mean by a life. If you mean it...
And eating and walking around and interacting with people.
Oh, well, there's, it's... in that sense, it is a life, I think. I think all dualism is a form of spiritual materialism. In other words, what we're trying to do here is raise consciousness. What we're trying to do is build community. It's arguable that walking on the cliff and smelling the roses is an incredibly self-indulgent thing to be doing, when what you could be doing is building a worldwide data network that would raise people out of poverty and ignorance and give them a shot at full...
What is that going to do, though?
Through education.
Raise people out of the ghettos and give them college education and stuff?
Well, I think information liberates, and that the control of information throughout history has been the mechanism by which class dominance and hierarchy has been maintained. So I think tearing the lid off the global database and inviting everybody to take what appeals to them is one of the most revolutionary things that... To the elites of the high-tech industrial democracies it may be available, but we're talking about suffering mankind here. In other words, I think it is a political obligation to give people the option of becoming free, not to free them, because then you're saying, follow me, but to give them the option of becoming free. If you travel to Bangkok and Calcutta and Cairo and actually feel the earth bursting at its seams with its accumulated toxins and social problems and so forth and so on, you see that business as usual has been canceled, and this thing you call having a life is business as usual. If you mean smelling the roses and walking on the cliff and all that, I mean, there is a place for that. But on the other hand, there is a question which hovers over us, which is, what is to be done? You know, what is to be done about the dilemma that our past history has placed us in? And all minds on deck. We are at battle station conditions here. We are entering into the narrow neck at the end of history. We will need every tool in our toolkit, from the poetry of Rumi to Vermeil and beyond. This is going to push us to the limit. Nothing human should be alien to us. And these technologies that we have created are as human as we are. They have been with us since the very first moment that we defined ourselves away from our fellow animals. So there is no turning back. The only people who can live in a world where they have endless time to smell the roses and contemplate the mysteries of bridge are people who are living in a social pyramid where their leisure time is purchased at the expense of the enormous suffering of other human beings. So I think...
There's a whole tradition, and it starts in Calcutta, Tibet, and other places, where each step is a precious step. Each doesn't have to be a rose you smell; it can be shit that you smell, but it's precious. So I don't think that's a fair. I don't think that's a fair comeback from her. I don't think you've answered her question, to be perfectly honest.
Explain more about why you don't think so. Because I don't understand. You're saying everything we do is potentially a step? Is that what you're saying?
Everything is a step. It's not even a potential.
But how does that contradict what I'm saying?
No. She had a question, I think, and maybe I misunderstood it, about she was sort of grounding herself in the physical reality of her life.
No, she was asserting the supremacy of it.
No, I wouldn't address her question.
No. No.
I
Well, wait a minute. Before we address her question, let's address the fact that her question is not easily addressed. In other words, this is a primary schism, which, too bad, we pushed it off till 7 minutes before the end. It's not going to be easily dealt with. People value the quality of life differently. They value their relationship to space and leisure differently. I understand what she means by get a life, but I feel it's an unfair attack on the position represented here. People exist along a spectrum of experience. We are going to have to keep one hand, and Mark was at great pains to make this clear throughout the weekend. I don't think it's true that this was not dealt with. You said you never heard immediacy dealt with. You said something about the future. Well, what was the aphorism? But what was the aphorism where you said something about history is something, the future is something?
Yeah, what I was talking about was the actual present moment that we are living here.
Well, but didn't all the
history and the future is a mystery. They're just figments of our imagination, and we can play with them in a curiosity manner.
But didn't all the talk about psychedelics imply the importance of the felt presence of immediate experience?
Or all the yoga.
Right, there have been 48 hours of immediate experiences in a row, and we've all been here for them.
I just want to address this to Susan's question, which is this, that I think I heard recently, like this week, that Clinton or Gore, somebody suggested that every American should be on the web by a certain time.
Right, yes.
And I think that if you just took that model, that the most impoverished ghettos in the cities, Appalachia, and all of this, that if all those kids, you know, were actually on the web, that would be a good thing. That it doesn't mean they're going to spend all their time doing that, right?
Are they going to have food in the ghettos in the mountains?
I know they're going to be selling web computers for crap.
Check this out. With the availability of perfect information is the possibility of perfect resource allocation.
Reach it.
Right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that is what Mark's virtual reality is helping us get towards. The ability to understand.
Can we go back to
information
I think what I hear her saying is, I have this web and I have a lot of information now that I might not have had before from all over the world, right? But you know, this morning when my kid was throwing a fit because he doesn't want to leave today, your web isn't going to help me deal with that. And I think that's what she's saying. There's a piece of the world. This gives me so much more stuff than I ever had before at my fingertips, and I can search because I'm in the browser, right? But he's absolutely right. But you know what? I still have to work with it.
Now here's, I need to make a comment here because I've been trying as hard as I can to stress the heart and stress the heart and stress the heart. The web is not knowledge in your head. It's not facts. It's the connection of hearts and minds on the planet. I'm sorry, I sounded very pedantic and I apologize. But I want to drive the point home. The problem is
it's not that in and of itself.
No, in and of itself, it is that.
It's pure connectivity.
Yeah, but we have really poor interfaces to anything other than textual, intellectual domains as yet.
It is not a heart in and of itself. I mean,
no, but it's connectivity. That's what he's saying. Pardon me? It isn't potential connections. It is real
connections.
I value actually, you know, it's just as real as talking to somebody on the phone. I mean, it's real time. It's really there. It is a communication tool. And I think what we're coming to, and I hope we're coming to, is some of us value actually living in real intimate communication, face-to-face talking and stuff. Some of us value intellectualism as the answer to all necessities and needs. And I agree, man, 100% freedom is information that will give us strength and power. But, you know, back to what Ronan was talking about, until we actually come out and live life. I mean, that's my value. And I think that was the point that he was making, is that in order to come together, we have to go back into smaller communities and find and remember from where we came. Not all the information. It's just the basic core, our selfness, our livingness. So our values are opposite. That's what's going on.
But are they really mutually exclusive?
I don't see them as being opposite either.
I think we're saying the connectivity of the web is part of the plan, part of the activities of learning. And what you're talking about is more how do we teach or how do people learn how to survive on the planet. And personally, I think that the web, branching off from what was brought up initially, that language assists or defines content or affects content, so you get a more elaborate language or simpler language, and it might create better ways to communicate and content, because it's a fact that what we're doing doesn't look like it's working, the way that society's evolved on the planet doesn't look self-sustaining, and VR and the web is probably our best shot to, amp up the learning of everyone, and it certainly sounds like it's worth a shot. But it's not going to be worth. It's not going to happen if it becomes all Disney and, as it is now, one of the main things that children learn growing up is what Steven Spielberg buries within the theme of a movie. And maybe that's the way it always will be. And